Huh, Bobby said. Then a moment later, if this is a race, I know where there's a racing ship. Chapter 39. Holden. Holden pulled himself a cup of coffee from the galley coffee pot, and the strong smell filled the room. He could feel the eyes of the crew on his back with an almost physical force. He'd called them all there, and once they'd assembled and taken their seats, he'd turned his back on them and started making coffee. I'm stalling for time because I forgot how I wanted to say this, he thought. He put some sugar in his coffee, even though he always drank it black, just because stirring took a few more seconds. So, who are we? He said as he stirred. His question was met with silence, so he turned around and leaned back against the countertop, holding his unwanted cup of coffee and continuing to stir. Seriously, he said. Who are we? It's the question I keep coming back to. Amos said and shifted in his seat. My name's Amos, Cap. You feeling okay? No one else spoke. Alex was staring at the table in front of him, his dark scalp shining through his thinning hair under the harsh white of the galley lights. Prax was sitting on the counter next to the sink and looking at his hands. He flexed them periodically as though trying to figure out what they were for. Only Naomi was looking at him. Her hair was pulled up into a thick tail, and her dark, almond-shaped eyes were staring right into his. It was fairly disconcerting. I've recently figured out something about myself, Holden continued, not letting Naomi's unblinking stare throw him off. I've been treating you all like you owe me something, and none of you do. And that means I've been treating you like shit. No, Alex started without looking up. Yes, Holden said, and stopped until Alex looked up at him. Yes. You maybe more than anyone else. Because I've been scared to death, and cowards always look for an easy target. And you're about the nicest person I know, Alex, so I treated you badly because I could get away with it. And I hope you forgive me for that, because I really hate that I did it. Sure I forgive you, Cap, Alex said with a smile and his heavy drawl. I'll try to earn it. Holden answered, bothered by the easy reply. But Alex said something else to me recently that I've been thinking about a lot. He reminded me that none of you are employees. We're not all in the Canterbury. We don't work for Pure and Clean anymore. And I don't own this ship any more than any of you do. We took contracts from the OPA in exchange for pocket money and ship expenses, but we never talked about how to handle the excess.
You opened that account, Alex said.
Yeah, there's a bank account with all of the extra money in it. Last I checked, there was just under 80 grand in there. I said we'd keep it for ship expenses, but who am I to make that decision for the rest of you? That's not my money. It's our money. We earned it.
But you're the captain, Amos said, then pointed at the coffee pot.
While Holden fixed him a cup, he said, Am I? I was the XO on the Canterbury. It made sense for me to be the captain after the Cant got nuked. He handed the cup to Amos and sat down at the table with the rest of the crew. But we haven't been those guys for a long time now. Who we are now is four people who don't actually work for anyone. Prax cleared his throat at this, and Holden nodded an apology to him.
Anyone long-term, let's say. There is no corporation or government granting me authority over this crew. We're just four people who sort of own a ship that Mars will probably try to take back the first chance they get.
This is legitimate salvage, Alex said.
And I hope the Martians find that compelling when you explain it to them, Holden replied. But it doesn't change my point. Who are we? Naomi nodded a fist at him. I see where you're going. We've left a lot of this kind of stuff just up in the air because we've been running full tilt since the Canterbury. And this, Holden said, is the perfect time to figure that stuff out. We've got a contract to help Prax find his little girl, and he's paying us so we can afford to run the ship.
Once we find May, how do we find the next job? Do we go looking for a next job? Do we sell the Rosie to the OPA and retire on Titan? I think we need to know those things. No one spoke. Prax pushed himself off the counter and started rummaging through the cabinets. After a minute or two, he pulled out a package that read chocolate pudding on the side and said, "Can I make this?" Naomi laughed. Alex said, "Knock yourself out, Doc." Prax pulled a bowl out and began mixing ingredients into it. Oddly enough, because the botanist was paying attention to something else, it created a sense of intimacy for the crew. The outsider was doing outside things, leaving them to talk among themselves. Holden wondered if Prax knew that and was doing it on purpose. Amos slurped down the last of his coffee and said, "So, you called this meeting, Cap. You have something in mind?"
"Yeah," Holden said, taking a moment to think.
"Yeah, kind of."
Naomi put a hand on his arm and smiled at him.
"We're listening." "I think we get married," he said with a wink at Naomi. "Make it all nice and legal."
"Wait," she said. The look on her face was more horrified than Holden would have hoped.
No, that's sort of a joke," Holden said. "But only sort of. You see, I was thinking about my parents. They formed their initial collective partnership because of the farm. They were all friends. They wanted to buy the property in Montana, so they made a group large enough to afford it. It wasn't sexual. Father Tom and Father Caesar were already sexual partners and monogamous. Mother Tamara was single. Fathers Joseph and Anton and Mothers Elise and Sophie were already a polyamorous civil unit. Father Dmitri joined a month later when he started dating Tamara. They formed a civil union to own the property jointly. They wouldn't have been able to afford it if they were all paying taxes for separate kids, so they had me as a group."
"Earth," Alex said, "is a weird freaking place."
8 parents to a baby ain't exactly common," Amos said.
"But it makes a lot of economic sense with a baby tax," Holden said. "So it's not unheard of, either."
"What about people making babies without paying the tax?" Alex said.
"It's tougher to get away with than you think," Holden said.
"Unless you never go to a doctor or only use black markets."
Amos and Naomi shared a quick look that Holden pretended not to see.
"Okay," Holden continued. "Forget babies for a minute. What I'm talking about is incorporating. If we plan to stick together, let's make it legal. We can draft up incorporation papers with one of the independent outer planet stations like Ceres or Europa and become joint owners of this enterprise."
"What," Naomi said, "does our little company do?"
"Exactly," Holden said in triumph.
Amos said again.
"No, I mean that's exactly what I've been asking," Holden continued. "Who are we? What do we want to do? Because when this contract with Prax is over, the bank account will be well padded, we'll own a high-tech warship, and we'll be free to do whatever we damn well want to do."
"Jesus, Cap," Amos said. "I just got half a heart on."
"I know, right?"
Holden replied with a grin. Prax stopped mixing things in his bowl and stuck it in the refrigerator. He turned and looked at them with the careful movements of someone who feared he'd be asked to leave if anyone noticed him. Holden moved over to him and put an arm around his shoulder.
"Our friend Prax here can't be the only guy who needs to hire a ship like this, right?"
"We're faster and meaner than just about anything a civvy can dig up," Alex said with a nod.
"And when we find May, it will be as high profile as you could hope for," Holden said. "What better advertising could we get than that?"
"Admit it, Cap," Amos said. "You just kind of like being famous."
"If it gets us jobs, sure."
"We're much more likely to wind up broke, out of air, and drifting through space dead," Naomi said.
"That's always a possibility," Holden admitted.
"But man, aren't you ready to be your own boss for a change? If we find we can't make it on our own, we can always sell the ship for a giant sack of money and go our separate ways. We have an escape plan."
Yeah, Amos said. Fuck yeah, let's do this. How do we start?
Well, Holden said, that's another new thing. I think we have to vote. No one of us owns the ship, so I think we vote on important stuff like this from now on.
Amos said, all in favor of making ourselves into a company to own the ship, raise your hand.
To Holden's delight, they all raised their hands. Even Prax started to, realized he was doing it, and then put it back down.
I'll get us an attorney on Ceres and start the paperwork, Holden said. But that leads to something else. A company can own a ship, but a company can't be the registered captain. We'll need to vote for whoever holds that title.
Amos started laughing. Give me a fucking break. Raise your hand if Holden isn't the captain.
No hands went up.
See? Amos said.
Holden started to speak, but stopped when something uncomfortable happened in his throat and behind his sternum.
Look, Amos said, his face kind. You're just that guy.
Naomi nodded and smiled at Holden, which only made the ache in his chest pleasantly worse. I'm an engineer, she said. There isn't a program on this ship I haven't tweaked or rewritten, and I could probably take her apart and put her back together by myself at this point. But I can't bluff at cards. And I'm never going to be the one that stares down the joint navies of the inner planets and says, back the hell off.
Roger that, Alex said. And I just want to fly my baby. That's all, and that's it. If I get to do that, I'm happy.
Holden started to speak, but to her surprise and embarrassment, the minute his mouth opened, his eyes teared up. Amos saved him.
I'm just a grease monkey, he said. I push tools, and mostly wait for Naomi to tell me when and where to push them. I got no desire to run anything bigger than that machine shop. You're the talker. I've seen you face down Fred Johnson, UN naval captains, OPA cowboys, and drugged-up space pirates. You talk out your ass better than most people do using their mouth, and sober.
Thank you, Holden finally said. I love you guys. You know that, right?
Plus which, Amos continued, no one on this ship will try harder to jump in front of a bullet for me than you will. I find that appealing in a captain.
Thanks, Holden said again.
Sounds settled to me, Alex said, getting up and heading toward the ladder. Gonna go make sure we're not aimed at a rock or something.
Holden watched him go and was gratified to see him wiping his eyes as soon as he got out of the room. It was okay to be a weepy little kid as long as everyone else was being a weepy little kid. Prax gave him an awkward pat on the shoulder and said, come back to the galley in an hour. Pudding will be ready. Then he wandered out and into his cabin. He was already reading messages on his hand terminal as he closed the door.
Okay, Amos said. What now?
Amos, Naomi said, getting up and walking over to stand in front of Holden. Please take ops for me for a while.
Roger that,
Amos said, the grin existing only in his voice. He climbed the ladder up and out of sight, the pressure hatch opening for him, then slamming behind him when he went.
Hi, Holden said. Was that right?
She nodded.
I feel like I got you back. I was worried I'd never see you again.
If you hadn't yanked me out of that hole I was digging for myself, neither of us would have.
Naomi leaned forward to kiss him, and he wrapped his arms around her and pulled her tight. When they stopped to breathe, he said, is this too soon? She said, shut up, and kissed him again. Without breaking the kiss, she pulled her body away from his and began fumbling with the zipper of his jumpsuit. Those ridiculous Martian military jumpsuits that had come with the ship, Tachi stenciled across the back. Now that they were going to have their own company, they'd need to get something better. Jumpsuits made a lot of sense for shipboard life, with changing gravities and oily mechanical parts, but something actually tailored to fit them all, and in their own colors. Rocinante on the back.
Naomi's hand got inside the jumpsuit and under his t-shirt, and he lost all thought of fashion choices.
"My bunk or yours?" he said.
"You have your own bunk?"
"Not anymore," he thought.
Making love to Naomi had always been different than with anyone else. Some of it was physical. She was the only belter he'd ever been with, and that meant she was physiologically different in some ways. But that wasn't the most notable part for him. What made Naomi different was that they'd been friends for 5 years before they'd slept together. It wasn't a flattering testament to his character, and it made him cringe when he thought about it now, but he'd always been pretty shallow when it came to sex. He'd picked out potential sexual partners within minutes of meeting a new woman, and because he was pretty and charming, he usually got the ones he was interested in. He'd always been quick to allow himself to mistake infatuation for genuine affection. One of his most painful memories was the day Naomi had called him on it, exposed for him the little game he played in which he convinced himself he genuinely cared for the woman he was sleeping with so that he wouldn't feel like a user. But he had been. The fact that the women were using him in turn didn't make him feel better about it. Because Naomi was so physically different from the ideal that growing up on Earth had created, he had just not seen her as a potential sexual partner when they'd first met. And that meant he'd grown to know her as a person without any of the sexual baggage he usually carried. When his feelings for her grew beyond friendship, he was surprised. And somehow, that changed everything about sex. The movements might all be the same, but the desire to communicate affection rather than demonstrate prowess changed what everything meant. After their first time together, he'd lain in bed for hours feeling like he'd been doing it wrong for years and only just realized. He was doing that again now. Naomi slept on her side next to him, her arm thrown across his chest and her thigh across his, her belly against his hip and her breast against his ribs. It had never been like this with anyone before her, and this was what it was supposed to be like, the sense of complete ease and contentment. He could imagine a future in which he hadn't been able to prove he'd changed, and in which she never came back to him. He could see years and decades of sexual partners, always trying to recapture this feeling and never being able to, because, of course, it wasn't really about the sex. Thinking about it made his stomach hurt. Naomi talked in her sleep. Her mouth whispered something mysterious into his neck, and the sudden tickle woke him up enough to realize he'd been drifting off to sleep. He hugged her head to his chest and kissed the top of it, then rolled over onto his side and let himself fade. The wall monitor over the bed buzzed. "Who is it?" he said, suddenly as tired as he could remember ever having been. He'd just closed his eyes a second earlier, and he knew he'd never be able to open them now.
"Me, Cap," Alex said.
Holden wanted to shout at him, but couldn't find the energy.
"Okay. You need to see this," was all Alex said.
But something in his voice woke Holden up. He sat up, moving Naomi's arm out of the way. She said something in sleep talk, but didn't wake.
"Okay," he said again, turning on the monitor.
A white-haired, older woman with very strange facial features looked out at him. It took his addled mind a second to recognize that she wasn't deformed, just being crushed by a heavy burn. With a voice distorted by G-forces mashing down on her throat, she said, "My name is Christian Avasarala. I'm the UN Assistant Undersecretary of Executive Administration. A UN admiral has dispatched 6 Monroe-class destroyers from the Jupiter system to destroy your ship. Track this transponder code and come meet me, or you and everyone on your ship will die. This is not a fucking joke." Chapter 40. Prax. Thrust pressed him into the crash couch. It was only 4G, but even a single full G called for nearly the full medical cocktail. He had lived in a place that kept him weak. He'd known that, of course, but mostly in terms of xylem and phloem. He had taken the normal low-G medical supplements to encourage bone growth. He had exercised as much as the guidelines asked, usually. But always in the back of his mind, he'd thought it was idiocy. He was a botanist. He'd live and die in the familiar tunnels with their comfortable low gravity, less than a fifth of Earth's. An Earth he would never have reason to go to. There was even less reason he would ever need to suffer through a high-G burn. And yet, here he lay in the gel like he was at the bottom of an ocean. His vision was blurred, and he fought for every inhalation. When his knee hyperextended, he tried to scream but couldn't catch his breath. The others would be better. They'd be used to things like this. They knew that they'd survive. His hindbrain wasn't at all sure. Needles dug into the flesh of his thigh, injecting him with another cocktail of hormones and paralytics. Cold like the touch of ice spread from the injection points, and a paradoxical sense of ease and dread filled his mind. At this point, it was a balancing act between keeping his blood vessels elastic enough that they wouldn't burst and robust enough that they wouldn't collapse. His mind slid out from under him, leaving something calculating and detached in its place. It was like pure executive function without a sense of self. What had been his mind knew what he had known, remembered the things he remembered, but wasn't him. In this altered state of consciousness, he found himself taking inventory. Would it be okay to die now? Did he want to live? And if he did, on what terms? He considered the loss of his daughter as if it were a physical object. Loss was the soft pink of crushed seashell, where once it had been the red of old, scabby blood. The red of an umbilical cord, waiting to drop free. He remembered May, what she had looked like, the delight in her laugh. She wasn't like that anymore, if she was alive, but she was probably dead. In his gravity-bent mind, he smiled. Of course, his lips couldn't react. He'd been wrong. All along, he'd been wrong. The hours of sitting by himself, telling himself that May was dead. He'd thought he was toughening himself, preparing himself for the worst. That wasn't right at all. He'd said it. He'd tried to believe it, because the thought was comforting. If she was dead, she wasn't being tortured. If she was dead, she wasn't scared. If she was dead, then the pain would be all his, entirely his, and she would be safe. He noticed without pleasure or pain that it was a pathological mental frame. But he'd had his life and his daughter taken from him, had survived a near starvation while the cascade effect ate what was left of Ganymede, had been shot at, had faced a half-alien killing machine, and was now known throughout the solar system as a wife-beater and pedophile. He had no reason to be sane. It wouldn't help him. And, on top of that, his knee really hurt. Somewhere far, far away, in a place with light and air, something buzzed three times, and the mountain rolled off his sternum. Coming back to himself was like rising from the bottom of a pool.
"Okay, y'all," Alex said across the ship's system. "We're calling this dinner. Take a couple minutes for your livers to crawl up off your spinal cords and we'll meet up in the galley. We've only got 50 minutes, so enjoy it while you can."
Prax took a deep breath, blowing it out between his teeth, and then sat up. His whole body felt bruised. His hand terminal claimed the thrust was at 1/3 G, but it felt like more and less than that. He swung his legs over the edge, and his knee made a wet, grinding pop. He tapped at his terminal.
I'm not sure I can walk, he said. My knee. Hang tight, Doc. Amos's voice came from the speaker. I'll come take a look at it. I'm pretty much the closest thing we've got to a medic unless you want to hand it over to the med bay.
Just don't try to weld them back together, Holden said. It doesn't work.
The link went silent. While he waited, Prax checked his incoming messages. The list was too long for the screen, but that had been true since the initial message had gone out. The message titles had changed. Baby rapers should be tortured to death. Don't listen to the haters. I believe you. My father did the same thing to me. Turn to Jesus before it's too late. He didn't open them. He checked the news feeds under his own name and May's and had 7,000 active feeds with those keywords. Nicola's only had 50. There had been a time that he'd loved Nicola, or thought that he had. He'd wanted to have sex with her as badly as he'd wanted anything before in his life. He told himself there had been good times, nights they'd spent together. May had come from Nicola's body. It was hard to believe that something so precious and central to his life had also been part of a woman who, by the evidence, he'd never really known. Even as the father of her child, he hadn't known the woman who could have made that recording. He opened the hand terminal's recording fields, centered the camera on himself, and licked his lips. Nicola. 20 seconds later, he closed the field and erased the recording. He had nothing to say. Who are you? And who do you think I am? Came closest. And he didn't care about the answer to either one. He went back to the messages, filtering on the names of the people who'd been helping him investigate. There was nothing new since the last time.
Hey, Doc, Amos said, lumbering into the small room.
I'm sorry, Prax said, putting his terminal back into its holder beside the crash couch. It was just during that last burn. He gestured to his knee. It was swollen, but not as badly as he'd expected. He'd thought it would be twice its normal size, but the anti-inflammatories that had been injected into his veins were doing their job. Amos nodded, put a hand on Prax's sternum, and pushed him back into the gel.
I got a toe that pops out sometimes, Amos said. Little tiny joint, but get it at the wrong angle and the fast burn hurts like a bitch. Try not to tense up, Doc.
Amos bent the knee twice, feeling the joint grind.
This ain't that bad. Here, straighten it out.
Okay. Amos wrapped one hand around Prax's ankle, braced the other on the frame of the couch, and pulled slowly and irresistibly. Prax's knee bloomed with pain, and then a deep, wet pop and a nauseating sensation of tendon shifting against bone.
There you go, Amos said. We go back into burn, make sure you got that leg in the proper place. Hyperextend that again right now, we'll pop your kneecap off, okay?
Right, Prax said, starting to sit up.
I'm sorry as hell to do this, Doc,
Amos said, putting a hand on his chest, pushing him back down.
I mean, you're having a lousy day and all, but you know how it is.
Prax frowned. Every muscle in his face felt bruised. What is it?
All this bullshit they're saying about you and the kid. That's all just bullshit, right?
Of course, Prax said.
Because, you know, sometimes things happen. You didn't even mean them to. Have a hard day, lose your temper maybe, or shit, you get drunk. Some of the things I've done when I've really tied one on, I don't even know about until later.
Amos smiled.
I'm just saying, if there's a grain of truth, something that's getting all exaggerated, it'd be better if we knew it now, right?
I never did anything that she said.
It's okay to tell me the truth, Doc, I understand. Sometimes guys do stuff. Doesn't make them bad.
Prax pushed Amos's hand aside and brought himself up to sitting. His knee felt much better. Actually, he said, it does. That makes them bad. Amos's expression relaxed. His smile changed in a way Prax couldn't quite understand.
All right, Doc. Like I said, I'm sorry as hell.
but I did have to ask. It's okay, Prax said, standing up. For a moment, the knee seemed like it might give, but it didn't. Prax took a tentative step, then another. It would work. He turned toward the galley, but the conversation wasn't finished. If I had done those things, that would have been okay with you?
Oh, fuck no. I'd have broken your neck and thrown you out the airlock, Amos said, clapping him on the shoulder.
Ah, Prax said, a gentle relief loosening in his chest. Thank you.
Anytime.
The other three were in the galley when Prax and Amos got there, but it still felt half full. Less. Naomi and Alex were sitting across the table from each other. Neither of them looked as ruined as Prax felt. Holden turned from the wall with a formed foam bowl in either hand. The brown slurry in them smelled of heat and earth and cooked leaves. As soon as it caught his nose, Prax was ravenous.
Lentil soup?
Holden asked as Prax and Amos sat on either side of Alex.
That would be wonderful, Prax said. I'll just take a tube of goo, Amos said. Lentils give me gas. And I can't see popping an intestine next time we accelerate being fun for anyone.
Holden put a fresh bowl in front of Prax and handed a white tube with a black plastic nipple to Amos, then sat beside Naomi. They didn't touch, but the connection between them was unmistakable. He wondered whether May had ever wanted him to reconcile with Nicola. Impossible now.
Okay, Alex, Holden said. What have we got?
Same thing we had before, Alex said. 6 destroyers burning like hell towards us, a matching force burning after them, and a racing pinnace heading away from us on the other side.
Wait, Prax said. Away from us?
They're matching our course. Already did the turnaround, and they're getting up speed to join us.
Prax closed his eyes, picturing the vectors.
We're almost there, then? He said.
Very nearly, Alex said. 18, 20 hours.
How's it going to play out? Are the Earth ships going to catch us?
They're going to catch the hell out of us, Alex said. But not before we get that pinnace. Call it 4 days after, maybe.
Prax took a spoonful of the soup. It tasted just as good as it smelled. Green, dark leaves were mixed in with the lentils, and he spread one open with his spoon, trying to identify it. Spinach, maybe. The stem margin didn't look quite right, but it had been cooked, after all.
How sure are we this isn't a trap? Amos asked.
We aren't, Holden said. But I don't see how it would work.
If they want us in custody instead of dead, Naomi suggested. We're talking about opening our airlock for someone way high up in the Earth government.
So she is who she says she is?
Prax asked.
Looks like it, Holden said.
Alex raised a hand.
Well, if it's to talk to some little grandma from the UN or get my ass shot off by 6 destroyers, I'm thinking we can break out the cookies and tea, right?
It would be late in the game to go for another plan, Naomi said. It makes me damn uncomfortable having Earth saving me from Earth, though.
Structures are never monolithic, Prax said.
There's more genetic variation within Belters or Martians or Earthers than there is between them. Evolution would predict some divisions within the group structures and alliances without members.